This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
The election is over. The result is surprising. The uproar is intense. The opportunities barely discussed. The election I refer to is the one in Palestine. The surprising result is the victory of Hamas. The uproar comes from the Israeli government and others who support it, magnified by the media echo chamber. To discuss these and the opportunities, I'm joined in the studio by Red Eye member Mordechai Breenberg, who is an activist with CanPalNet, Canadian-Palestine Support Network. Hi, Mordechai.
Hi, good morning.
Can it be said that this election was free and fair?
There certainly were some limitations. We can't forget that this election was held under Israeli occupation, and there were efforts by governments like the United States to threaten voters if they supported Hamas and so on. But that taken into account, the observers of the election, which I referred, for example, the Canadian monitors sent and funded by the Canadian government, the Carter Center monitors, including Jimmy Carter, all agreed that there was a vigorous election campaign. There was a broad range of choices of parties and candidates. There was an exceptionally large turnout, and the entire process was peaceful in the Palestinian participation. So in conclusion, I think we can say it's not a jot less democratic than an Israeli election, maybe more, because Israel excludes from election parties that wish to campaign for any change in the privileged legal status of Jewish citizens of Israel as compared to non-Jewish citizens of Israel.
Why do you think Hamas did so well?
I think the one important factor to start with is that this election was not an election about religion or religion and politics, so people didn't campaign on that and people didn't vote on that question. There are, that said, some negative and positive factors that I think help us understand better why so many Palestinians voted for Hamas. First, the negative factors. There has been tremendous concern among the Palestinian people over the corruption of the Fatah-led Palestinian Authority government up to this point, and discussed with that. Also very important, they had high expectations when Oslo was announced as a so-called peace process. More than a dozen years after, there's been, rather than any improvement in Palestinian life and recognition of their advance and realization of their rights, the situation has worsened. More settlements, more checkpoints, more assassinations by Israeli authorities, etc. So those are negative factors that they hold the existing Fatah-dominated Palestinian Authority responsible for the corruption and for have achieving nothing but letting the situation worsen for Palestinians. On the positive side, Hamas is widely regarded and respected for the social services it has provided at the community or base level, particularly schooling and clinics for people. And there's also the expectation that Hamas will be more resolute in and sincere in being a spokesperson for Palestinian rights under international law.
The Israeli and U.S., European, and Canadian governments have all responded with hostility to the election results. Why has this happened?
Well, you had that quote from Robert Fisk earlier in announcing what was on the program, where he said, "God damn this democracy, what are we to do with people who don't vote the way they should?" And, of course, it's people in governments around the world, including Israel, say, "Oh, well, yes, it was a democratic election, but they made the wrong choice, and we can't accept their choice." And there's really just a whole number of hypocrisies around this. If you think back that Ariel Sharon was elected Prime Minister of Israel, he's a documented war criminal by the basis of the Israeli government's own impaneled investigations into what happened in Lebanon, in Sabra and Shatila in particular. Yet no one raised a question, well, Shahra Sharon must apologize for his criminal behavior, and his well-known program for further ethnic cleansing must renounce that, otherwise we can't. Nobody did that. We have Jack Straw, the foreign minister of England, saying democracy goes with renunciation of violence. Well, maybe that's true, but one would expect, if Jack Straw is saying that, that he's going to withdraw British troops from Iraq, and maybe he's going to join the Christian peacemaker team and go to Baghdad. I mean, there's a whole series of those kind of hypocrisies, almost a garden of them, I would say. But there's important that it's not just a matter of hypocrisy. There is actually a calculated strategy underlying these hypocrisies. And the strategy is mainly to divert our attention from ongoing Israeli, what I would call unilateralism. That is, they say, well, we're really in favor of negotiations, but we can't negotiate until the Palestinians do X, Y, and Z. Meanwhile, they continue ahead with their program of increasing settlements, building a wall, seizing territory, etc. And they did that with the old Palestinian Authority, who even accepted the demands they're now making on Hamas, accepted them years ago, and it never stopped a pregnant woman, never saved the life of a pregnant woman who continued to be stopped at checkpoints and delivered stillbirths, etc. So that, I think, is what we have to understand, that this is just a repetition of an Israeli strategy backed by foreign governments, which is create arbitrary preconditions and then unilaterally proceed on your own agenda all the time, pretending that you really would negotiate if the other side would do this, this, and this.
Regardless of this hypocrisy by governments, what about the criticisms that Hamas is still a terrorist fundamentalist organization?
Well, that characterization of Hamas certainly is the media image, the media shorthand that we have been given. And it's a depiction, it's the cookie cutter image that for Al-Qaeda, where I think it is an appropriate image. But the question is that the same for Hamas and other organizations who are given this depiction? And so I don't claim to exceptional knowledge about Hamas, but I do feel an urgent need for myself and others to really do more research about this. So let me just sort of say that one of the more respected long-time Jewish Israeli peace activists, a guy called Mikhail Warshavsky, he's a secularist, he's a leftist, he's against religious mixing with state, he's opposed to religious-based parties. He wrote a commentary on the election after the results were known, in which he included this sentence: Hamas is not an irrational, fanatic organization. It has a wise political leadership. Now, he said that not because he agrees with Hamas, but because he feels that's a more accurate way of understanding the organization. The other thing that I feel is important for us to reflect on is that Hamas is a political organization, and it is in a dynamic process of transformation, it appears. So it would be the same as if we said, what is the Conservative Party? Well, if you asked that question 10 years ago, it would be one thing. If you asked it, you know, a year ago, it would be something. If you ask it today, it's something else. So the label by itself isn't sufficient. It's probably little known, because it was little publicized, that Hamas 1 year ago, more than a year ago, declared an end to suicide bombings. It declared a truce, a one-year truce, which it still maintained, even though Israel was continuing to try and provoke it into resuming suicide bombings by continuing assassinations of Hamas leadership. On the question of Israel, in a statement published in the British newspaper daily, The Guardian, from the head of the political bureau of Hamas, He made the statement in speaking to Israel, if you are willing to accept the principle of a long-term truce, in other words, if you and we're willing to say we'll stop military conflict, then we are prepared to negotiate the terms. And what is generally understood by that is that Hamas holds to the international standards of accepting two states and the right of return Israeli withdrawal from the West Bank. So I think what is most urgent for us is not to make hasty judgments of Hamas, keep a critical perspective, because I think that's appropriate for every political organization, and maybe look for statements in Hamas's own words. And in that regard, it's quite striking. The Guardian on January 31st and the Washington Post on the same day carried statements from two leading political figures in Hamas on their assessment of the contemporary political situation. And I think those are worth pondering and reading.
Israel and other governments that back them are threatening reprisals against the Palestinians for voting so strongly for Hamas. What dangers do these pose?
Serious dangers. The Palestinian people are in the occupied territories in abject poverty, and they have no self-sustaining economy. It's been destroyed by the Israelis. Palestinian Authority has been, for the last dozen years, getting funding, which is supposed to go to the Palestinian people's needs, of an amount of $1.6 billion a year, which is not a lot to sustain several million people. And they're now, the Israeli government, the American government, the Europeans are threatening to cut that funding. Israel's urging it, and the other governments are saying they will. And it's like punishing people for the vitality of their democracy. And you voted the wrong way, therefore we want you to starve more than you already are. We can only expect that a policy of that kind would just magnify the irrepressible anger of humiliation and just extend the conflict for yet another tragic generation. So I think we should, in the case of our Canadian government and others in other countries, should oppose any effort to punish Palestinians for the way they voted. And the other serious danger, of course, is that the foreign governments continue to support Israeli unilateralism, and I think that is seizing more lands and so forth, that we should press our government to uphold international law and require that of Israel, and we should work for boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaigns on Israel similar to those developed for South Africa to end apartheid.
Do you see any positive opportunities in this situation?
Definitely there are, and these, as you said in the introduction, are little commented upon. I think three that I would point out. The Palestinian political leadership has been highly fragmented and personalized, and I think the chance exists with Hamas, which is wanting to work with the other political movements, to provide some unification of this leadership. And with unified leadership, more cooperative leadership, you in fact, of course, increase the capacity for people to achieve their legitimate rights. A second thing, Hamas lays great importance, it said, in the coming period on prioritizing what they see as a reconstruction of a shattered Palestinian society. It's hard to imagine, you know, under so many decades and decades, nearly 40 years of occupation and really brutal military repression as well, and economic deprivations, how much that shatters a society. And their, say, a priority is to strengthen Palestinian society by re-knitting those broken bonds between people and among people. And the third thing, which I found is a sense of opportunity, is symbolized by the statements that Hamas wanted to see publicized to foreigners like ourselves in the Washington Post paper and so on, which is very different from the previous Palestinian Fatah-led leadership, which did almost nothing in that regard to explain the perspective and goal goals of the Palestinian people to those outside, which would increase our capacities for building solidarity. So I would say that between the dangers, which you asked me about earlier, and the opportunities, it's not a matter of us making predictions as to which will come. It's a matter, rather, that we have a responsibility as serious people to act to forestall those dangers to what extent we can, and to assist the possibilities that are positive to be realized.
Well, thank you for speaking with me.
Thanks.
I've been speaking with Red Eye Collective member Mordechai Breenberg. He is active in CanPalNet, Canada-Palestine Support Network. They will be holding a panel discussion during the Co-Development Canada Film Festival at Langara College campus next week. The discussion will be Sunday, February 12th at 2:30 p.m., just before the showing of two of the festival films on Palestine-Israel. For more information on this topic, you also can check out the website of CanPalNet. By the end of next week, they will have posted a variety of statements and commentary on the election and Hamas. The website is CanPalNet, which is CanPalNET.ca.